Hare Krishna. So today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 12. We'll be focusing on verse number 43. So Chapter 12 is titled as Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead. So text 43 is as follows.
यह शत्रबंधुर भुवितस्य धीरुधम यह शत्रबंधुर भुवितस्य धीरुधम अन्वारु रुक्षेदपि वर्षपूगै सत्पञ्चवर्षो यदहो विरल्पै प्रसाद्य वैकुंठम अवाप तत्पदम् यशत्रबंधुर्भुवितस्य धीरुधम् अन्वारु रुक्षेदपि वर्षपूगै सत्पञ्चवर्षो यदहो विरल्पै प्रसाद्य वैकुण्ठमवाप तत्पदम् यशत्रबन्धुर्भुवितस्य धीरुधम् अन्वारु रुक्षेदपि वर्षपूगै सत्पञ्चवर्षो यदहोभिरल्पै प्रसाद्य वैकुण्ठमवाप तत्पदम्
यः वन् हु Shatrabandhu,
Shatrabandhu,
the son of a Kshatriya,
Bhuvi,
on the earth,
Tasya,
of Dhruva,
Adhirudham,
the exalted position,
Anu,
after,
Arurukshet,
can aspire to attain,
Api,
even,
Varshapugai,
after many years,
Sat Panchavarshah,
5 or 6 years old.
Yat,
which?
Ahobi Alpai,
after a few days.
Prasadya,
after pleasing.
Vaikuntham,
the Lord.
Avap,
attained.
Tatpadam,
his abode.
Translation.
Dhruva Maharaj attained an exalted position at the age of only 5 or 6 years. After undergoing austerity for 6 months, alas, a great Kshatriya cannot achieve such a position even after undergoing austerities for many, many years. Purport. Dhruva Maharaj is described herein as Kshatra Bandhu, which indicates that he was not fully trained as a Kshatriya because he was only 5 years old. He was not a mature Kshatriya. A Kshatriya or Brahmana has to take training. A boy born in the family of a Brahmana is not immediately a Brahmana. he has to take up the training and the purificatory process. The sage Narad Muni was very proud of having a devotee disciple like Dhruva Maharaj. He had many other disciples, but he was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj because in one lifetime, by dint of our Rajarishi, throughout the whole universe. There is the instance of the great king Bharata, who was also a great devotee, but he attained Vaikuntha Loka in three lives. In the first life, although he executed austerities in the forest, he became a victim of too much affection for a small deer. And in his next life, he had to take birth as a deer. Although he had a deer's body, he remembered his spiritual position. But he still had to wait until the next lifetime for perfection. In the next life, he took birth as Jad Bharat. Of course, in that life, he was completely freed from all material entanglements and he attained perfection and was elevated to Vaikuntha Loka. The lesson from the life of Dhruva Maharaj, is that if one likes, one can attain Vaikuntha Loka in one life without waiting for many other lives. The lesson from the life of Dhruva Maharaj is that if one likes, one can attain Vaikuntha Loka in one life without waiting for many other lives. My Guru Maharaj, Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, used to say that every one of his disciples could attain Vaikuntha Loka in this life without waiting for another life to execute devotional service. One simply has to become as serious and sincere as Dhruva Maharaj. One simply has to become as serious and sincere as Dhruva Maharaj. Then it is quite possible to attain Vaikuntha Loka and go back home, back to Godhead in one life. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatam Maham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpataru Vyascha Kripasindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudhirayet Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavatir Naishtiki. Hare Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj attained an exalted position at the age of only 5 or 6 years after undergoing austerity for 6 months. Alas, a great Kshatriya cannot achieve such a position even after undergoing austerities for many, many years. Before I begin, I would like to thank Nandamandir Prabhu who agreed to kindly swap this class. Yesterday I was supposed to give class and I thought it was on Sunday. So Anirudh Prabhu has been very, very kind to me to stand in yesterday. And he took the class yesterday. But Nandamandir Prabhu was equally kind and he allowed me to do this service for my own purification today. So, we are in we are again coming to almost the end of this chapter in a few verses, which is called as Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead. And in the next chapters, there is descendants of Dhruva Maharaj are described, and then it moves on to King Vena's pastime and so on and so forth. So in one sense, the Dhruva Maharaj pastime, which has been going on since so many weeks and months, is now coming to an end. A very quick context of what has led up to today's verse. Dhruva Maharaj, after he attained, after he had darshan of Lord Vishnu and he was blessed, he started ruling the kingdom. And there was an instance where Dhruva Maharaj's brother was killed by the Yakshas, was troubled by the Yakshas. So Dhruva Maharaj was very, very unhappy with that, and he started decimating the entire Yaksha clan. Now, Yakshas are from the demigod clan. Their head is Kuvera. So, Swayambhu Manu, as his Siksha Guru, comes and stops him. He says, "What are you doing? Yes, I understand that you want to avenge, you know, one single trouble that was caused, but that doesn't mean you go on decimating the entire, you know, Yaksha race just because of you know, the one person did something wrong." So Dhruva Maharaj, being an elevated personality, immediately corrects himself. He stops his aparadhas. So sometimes, you know, when we do something and nobody corrects us, then we don't know. We just continue doing that. But sometimes when someone corrects us, then we still continue doing the same thing. But here in this case, Dhruva Maharaj, on correction, he immediately realized and took a step back. So that was one of the greatness of Dhruva Maharaj. And seeing that he stopped this, Kuvera, who was the head of the Yaksha clan, also was very pleased. So Kuvera comes himself in front of Dhruva Maharaj and offers him benediction. Now we all know the benediction which Kuvera can give. Whoever wants benediction from Kuvera, usually people will ask for dhanam dehi. They will ask, "Please give me wealth so that, you know, I don't have to struggle in this lifetime and worry about whether property prices are going up or down. So I'll have enough wealth to, you know, be very, very happy." So this is the kind of thinking that usually people will have. But Dhruva Maharaj did not ask for that. Dhruva Maharaj asked for pure devotional service. So that is another greatness of Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva Maharaj seeks pure bhakti, and he continues his duties as a householder kshatriya. He continues his duties. It's not that he ran away to the forest after that. A person who has had darshan of the Lord to come back into material life and continue his material duties with detachment is quite something. So Dhruva Maharaj does his duty, and he conducts his duty with aplomb. He conducts his duties in such a way that his subjects are very, very happy with him. In fact, it is mentioned that the subjects who were ruled by Dhruva Maharaj used to see a fatherly figure in Dhruva Maharaj, which is very unlike of today's leaders. Today's leaders, we don't see fatherly figure. I mean, I'm talking about the politicians of today's society. So Dhruva Maharaj very expertly managed dharma, artha, kama as well as moksha. He managed all the four in his kingdom, which is not very easy. And despite being a successful leader, having been tagged as a successful leader, Dhruva Maharaj showed timely renunciation. Sometimes when we are very successful in material life, it becomes very difficult for us to extricate ourselves from material life and to focus fully on our spiritual life. Because success always motivates one to continue in the activity which has given one such success. So, but Dhruva Maharaj retired timely. So, Dhruva Maharaj went to the Himalayas, to the Badrikashram, and in the association of devotees, he continued his devotional service. And what is it that he did in Badrikashram? He exactly practiced bhakti the way that Narad Muni had originally taught him how to do bhakti, which had helped him attain at the age of 5 the darshan of Lord Vishnu. Now, because of this sincerity, Dhruva Maharaj, who was already awarded with the darshan of Lord Vishnu in his childhood, now what happened because of that sincerity, one fine day when his bhajan was ripe, the Vaikuntha Viman comes to the to wherever he was meditating, to Badrikashram, and then Vaikuntha Viman, the Vishnu Dutas come and invite him to come and board the Vaikuntha plane. Dhruva Maharaj thinks of his mother, and his emotion is that for the people who have helped him in his spiritual life. So, thinking of his mother, he asks this question to the Vishnu Dutas, and they say that your mother has already boarded the plane there. Have a look. And he sees his mother has already boarded the plane. So, Dhruva Maharaj then proceeds towards Vaikuntha Loka. And that is in one sense the culmination of the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. Now, Narad Muni, who is his spiritual master, is extremely happy with the outcome that has happened in Dhruva Maharaj's spiritual life, that he boarded this Vaikuntha plane. And in that ecstasy of that outcome, Narad Muni is glorifying Dhruva Maharaj now to the entire world. As a part of that, Narad Muni, as a part of that glorification, he speaks 3 verses, 2 of which was covered yesterday and day before yesterday, and today is the 3rd verse which Narad Muni speaks in glorification of Dhruva Maharaj. So, in yesterday's, in the last 2 verses of glorification, Srila Prabhupada gives examples. What does the Narad Muni say? Narad Muni says that whatever Dhruva Maharaj has achieved is not possible to be achieved even by the Vedantists and the masters of Vedanta Sutra. That is what he has achieved. So, in one sense, that was the first verse of, in glorification. In the second verse, you know, Srila Prabhupada, understanding Narad Muni's mood also, comments that Dhruva conquered the Lord by his devotional qualifications. And Srila Prabhupada gives excellent examples. And some of the 2 great examples that Srila Prabhupada gives is that of Mother Yashoda, how she conquered through her love the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada also gives the example of Arjuna, who was in Sakhyaras with the Lord. So Vatsalya and Sakhya are glorified there. So the underlying point is that the Lord can be conquered only by bhakti. The Lord can be conquered only if we develop genuine feelings for the Lord within our heart. Only when we develop genuine Krishna prem will we attain the Lord. So there are several instances of that which we see throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. So recently we are studying the 10th canto, and in the 10th canto 2 things specifically appeal to me in this context, how the Lord is pleased. So there are 2 things which the Lord does when he is very pleased with a devotee. When the Lord is very pleased with a devotee, the Lord is very merciful. Because it is also said, Aishwarya Samagrasya Viryasya Aishashriya. In that verse it is said, one of the qualities of the Lord is Vairagyam, renunciation. As a part of that Vairagyam, one cannot have Vairagya if one doesn't have a forgiving nature. Because Vairagya is to let go. And unforgiving nature is to hold everything. So, the Lord let goes. And the Lord overlooks the faults of his devotee, but sees the genuine intent of the devotee. An example is given of Akrura, which really appealed to me. Akrura, a pure devotee of the Lord, he had the thankless job of taking the gopis away from Krishna. Now that is a really, really thankless job. For who are the highest devotees in the world? Gopis. Now if you do an aparadh to these devotees and that is the service that has been given to you, take away Krishna from the gopis, then you can imagine what kind of a mood the gopis are going to have towards you. So the gopis are thinking, who kept your name as Akrura? Your name should have been kept as Krur. Krur means merciless fellow, heartless fellow. But Akrura had to do this service because that is what the devotees wanted. Narad Muni wanted to expedite Lord Krishna's pastimes. So Narad Muni was very keen. Okay, Krishna, now you have done Vrindavan Leela. Now, you have to move to Mathura. And Narad Muni quickly wants to, see these Leelas. So Akrura goes to Vrindavan and takes Krishna. And there is some offense he did to the gopis. While serving a higher authority, he forgot to take care of the emotions and sentiments of the Vaishnavas. Now, when Akrura goes to take Krishna to Mathura, finally Akrura serves Krishna very well. And Lord Krishna even goes to Akrura's house. Not immediately, but later on. After killing Kamsa, he goes, visits Akrura's house. And Akrura serves, does Pada Puja to Krishna and worships him so very nicely. So, this is the sign of a pure exalted devotee. Akrura has no other intention but to serve Krishna. But later on, when the Dwarka pastimes happen, then what happens is, when Krishna is falsely accused by Satrajit of having stolen the Shamantaka jewel, which Lord did not actually steal, what happens? Akrura gets very offended that how dare all of you, how dare Satrajit point a finger at my worshipable Lord, Lord Shri Krishna, and say that Lord Shri Krishna is a thief, when actually Lord Krishna never stole the Shamantaka jewel. So what happens? Akrura, the pure devotee, becomes a part of the murder of Satrajit, who is Krishna's father-in-law, Satyabhama's father. Akrura becomes a party to the murder of his own worshipable Lord's father-in-law. Now this is very difficult to understand. And Acharya's comment that this is because of two reasons. One is because Akrura offended the gopis, so vestiges of aparadhas can trouble us later on in devotional life. And this offense was towards the gopis of Vrindavan, right? So that is one. Second reason is that, yes, Akrura may be a pure devotee, no doubt that he had the best intentions of the Lord in his heart, but Akrura ate food from the hands of Kamsa. He served so long under an Asuric personality that the leadership of an Asuric personality will have its own influences, and those influences will manifest at the most trying circumstance in our life. So in this case, Akrura could have done something different, but Akrura actually instigated the killing of Satrajit, Krishna's father-in-law. So now ordinarily when someone kills one's father-in-law, okay, and that too, the Lord is very attached, to everyone, okay. So, and again, Lord knows that Satyabhama will be impacted because her father has been murdered. So we can imagine the punishment Lord Krishna would now mete out to Akrura. But in actual practice, Lord Krishna forgives Akrura. In fact, he not only forgives Akrura, when Akrura leaves Dwaraka, running away from Krishna, thinking that, now I cannot show my face to Krishna after this, then what does Krishna do? It is said in Dwaraka, there are ill omens that start coming. Ill omens start coming, are focusing on Akrura, saying that ill omens are now happening though Krishna is present, because Akrura is not present in Dwaraka. And Krishna's renunciation and sense of pardon is so high that Krishna, instead of mitigating those ill omens, Krishna could have mitigated those ill omens. He could have said, so what if Akrura has left Dwaraka? I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All ill omens I can mitigate. So therefore I am mitigating all ill omens. Oh, everyone, please note that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No, Krishna doesn't do that. He actually continues those ill omens till Akrura comes back. And Krishna requests Akrura, no, Akrura, I understand that you have a pure heart. You did it for my reputation, so I don't mistake you. Please come back. And then Akrura comes back and those ill omens are reversed. So this is the nature of Lord Krishna, to work in the background all the time. So Lord Krishna is completely captured by the love of his devotee. So he becomes very pardoning even in the worst of situations. And then we also studied another pastime which touched my heart was the pastime of Krishna teasing Rukmini. Now, Rukmini went out of her way, in one sense, to marry Krishna. Out of her way, in the sense, she disobeyed everyone in the society. She went against the conventions of society. She requested the Lord through the Brahmana to kidnap her, much against the wishes of her own brother, Rukmi. So she antagonized so many people. So many kings were antagonized because of this. So she did that. And then Lord Krishna is, after all this that Rukmini has gone through, Lord Krishna looks at Rukmini and tells, hang on, why did you marry me? What did you see in me? Lord Krishna is asking that. And Lord Krishna is giving 16 reasons to Rukmini, why Rukmini should not have married him. And the final reason, as if others are not enough, Lord Krishna says, I am black and you are fair. So, this is the Lord, right? So, he is teasing her. Now, why is the Lord teasing her? The Acharya's comment, there are two reasons. Because Rukmini in Krishna Leela is none other than Chandravali. Chandravali is a typical right-wing gopi. There are two types of gopis, left-wing gopis and right-wing gopis. The right-wing gopis are extremely submissive in their nature, because their mood is, Krishna, I am yours. And the left-wing gopis are extremely dominating in their nature, saying, Krishna, you are mine. So that is the mood of both these gopis. So Krishna said, this Rukmini, she is so patient as Chandravali in my Dwarka Leela. She is, no, nothing can agitate her. I have never seen her getting angry. So I must do something today that I will take her to the brink of anger today. And she has to burst out. And I want to see her standing like this, the way Radharani or Lalita will stand and chastise me with the harshest of words. So this is the desire of the Lord to invoke, to somehow, what do you call that? What's the right word in English? To provoke her, yes. To provoke her. To lose her sthayi bhav, which is always being sober, like that. So Krishna tries his best. So 16 reasons he gives. And after giving all his 16 reasons, what happens? Rukmini, instead of getting angry, Rukmini faints. She faints. In fact, when she faints, it is mentioned that the 200 Krishna, he has to assume four hands too. Two hands are protecting her from fainting, and one hand is kind of, two more hands are telling her, okay, it's okay. I was just joking with you. And then Rukmini is giving back 16 reasons after that to Krishna why she did the right thing by marrying Krishna, and Krishna is defeated by her arguments. So the Acharya's comment that when the Lord is pleased, his Ichha Shakti, his desires are defeated. So the Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes that Ichha Shakti of the Lord is defeated by Prema Bhakti of the devotee. So Prema Bhakti has a preponderance or dominance over Ichha Shakti of the Lord. So here we see that Narad Muni is pointing out that because of Dhruva Maharaja's devotional qualifications, the Lord had to descend down. Otherwise, 5-6 months of austerities. Here in the verse he says, Kshatriyas who do so many austerities even for thousands of years, they cannot attain. But in 5-6 months, Dhruva Maharaj was able to attain the Lord's mercy. Now, here it is mentioned, the first line of the purport says that Dhruva Maharaj is described herein as Kshatra Bandhu, which indicates that he was not fully trained as a Kshatriya. Therefore, he is called as a Kshatra Bandhu. So, one may say, hang on, Dhruva Maharaj, he fought with the Yakshas, he defeated so many of them, so obviously he has demonstrated Kshatriya qualities of valor. So why is Narad Muni calling him as Kshatra Bandhu here? So that question can come to mind. So we have to understand that whatever Narad Muni is talking about here, is talking about the Dhruva Maharaj of 5-6 years. That is the point that Narad Muni is emphasizing here. And that's why he is calling, referring to Dhruva Maharaj as Kshatra Bandhu. Because Dhruva Maharaj ruled as an ideal Kshatriya for so many years, for 36,000 years he ruled. So this is referring to that aspect of 5-6 years old. Now, Kshatra Bandhu, why it is referred there? Because at 5-6 years, a child of 5-6 years hardly has received any So at the age of 5 to 6 years, hardly any child receives Kshatriya training. Right? So that is why Narad Muni says it is not possible for one without training to demonstrate the qualities of a Kshatriya. So such persons are called as Kshatriya Bandhu. Just like a Brahmana who does not exude the qualities of a true Brahmana is called as a Brahma Bandhu. So like that it is called, Dhruva Maharaj was referred to as Kshatriya Bandhu. So in Varnashrama Dharma, it is mentioned the qualities of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra are mentioned. So specifically, what are the qualities of a Kshatriya? So it is mentioned that the top qualities of a Kshatriya are to give in charity. And where does it come in the Srimad Bhagavatam? It comes in the very first canto when Bhishma Dev is lying on a bed of arrows and the Lord, in order to glorify his devotee Bhishma Dev, asks Bhishma Dev to speak Dharma Shastra to Dharmaraj Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira Maharaj is already Dharmaraj. But still, in order to glorify Bhishma, the Lord is asking him to speak Dharma Shastra. So in that conversation, in that samvad, Bhishma Dev is talking about the qualities of a Kshatriya. So the qualities of a Kshatriya are to give in charity. The second quality of a Kshatriya is Kshatriya must have Shastric knowledge. Now this is something that was a reminder. Even when I studied back the, for the second time when I came back to first canto, I said, I missed this point in the first study. Kshatriyas must be well versed with the Shastras. Then one may say, so what is the difference between a Brahmana and a Shastra? So the only difference is that a Brahmana studies the scriptures and teaches and preaches the scriptures, whereas a Kshatriya is not expected to teach and preach scriptures. But a Kshatriya is still required to be very well versed with the Shastras. For otherwise, why will a Kshatriya act under the instructions of a Brahmana? Kshatriya will mistrust the Brahmanas. A Kshatriya also needs to know that he is being guided properly by the Brahmanas. So Prabhupada says, unfortunately, the politicians, modern day politicians, who we can call as, Kshatriya Bandhu, if at all. Okay? So they don't have any knowledge of the Shastras. So any governmental policies, etc., we say, have no basis or reference to the scriptures. And that's why the world is going towards disorder and anarchy today. So giving in charity and Shastric knowledge, these are two qualities of a Kshatriya. The third quality of a Kshatriya is, a Kshatriya should not pretend to be non-violent. He should not pretend non-violent. In fact, a Kshatriya should give up his life for protecting his kingdom. And for protecting the kingdom, a Kshatriya has to go through rigorous training. Rigorous training. So, in fact, Bhishma Dev mentions, a Kshatriya should be trained in warfare. A Kshatriya should be trained in warfare. So, in another context, in my own personal life, I was I had to study the life of army men, okay, and what kind of training army men go through. So, these Kshatriyas of today, there are Kshatriyas even today who genuinely fight for their country. It is a political system sometimes which causes the problem, but there are people who really want to fight for the right cause today. For example, in India, when the terrorists were holed up in the Taj Hotel, so many Kshatriyas, many commandos gave up their life for that rightful cause. And because of that, Bombay was saved from a great disaster. And time and again, these people have done that. So for us, we have many times we forget to glorify these personalities. But we have to understand, for the sake of these personalities who are guarding our kingdom and who are protecting Dharma in our kingdom in their own ways by giving up their life, it is not going to be easy for us to chant. What to speak of publicly, even chanting privately will be over if we allow the Yavanas and the Chandalas to take up leadership, because they will take away all our beads. Just like in the Salted Bread book, we found that the devotees who were holed up in the jail, their beads were taken away. So we sometimes forget to have gratitude towards these personalities simply because they are not chanting Hare Krishna. But for they giving up their lives, we will not be able to run our temples. We will not be able to do our devotional service. So it is mentioned that a Kshatriya must be trained in warfare. Now, when I studied what kind of warfare training these people goes to, it was eye opener for me. It is said that, you know, I was specifically studying the Navy SEALs of the United States. Amongst the topmost Kshatriyas in the world, the Navy SEALs and the British SAS, you know, their names are mentioned. And in India also, it is said that the Indian Marcos, who are called as Marine Commandos, they are the best of the best. And to get into this Kshatriya group, there is a very, very stringent process. When I was studying, I was seeing that their life, actually the life of a Kshatriya commando, begins in the morning with a 20 kilometer run. Every day morning, 20 kilometers they have to run. I don't know how much is 20 kilometers from here. Running till where and coming back. 10 kilometers from here is what? Upper crossing? I don't know. Running and coming back to the temple. 20 kilometers every day. And 20 kilometers trek in the night with a 60 kg load. Then it is said that once a week they have to do 120 kilometers of walk with 60 kg load on their back. They are given training what is called as the hello. Hello jump is high altitude, low opening jump. They have to undergo all this warfare training where the temperature on top is minus 40 degrees centigrade. Then it is said that they have to have 20 hours of physical exertion daily for a week, which they call as Hell's Week. The week itself is called as Hell's Week. The Kshatriyas have to go to that kind of warfare training with 4 hours sleep, 20 hours. It's like 20 hours in a gym, non-stop workout. So that's the kind of training these commandos undergo. And they have to then, after that, walk in thigh-high thick mud. Walking in sand and mud is so difficult. Every step is so difficult. They have to walk like that with a 25-kilo backpack. So you are carrying almost a Singapore Airline baggage plus 5 kilos extra you have with all that masala and that, you know, ketchups and all that. And then you are going through thick sand. And it is mentioned that at the end of that, after all this tiredness, people will collapse. But they have another 2.5 kilometers final obstacles. Right now the only obstacle was the sand, where they have to now jump, crawl, all these things, 2.5 kilometers more. And immediately after they reach, they have to shoot a target 25 meters away with precision. And if they don't, they are failed. They can't make it to the commando. So can you imagine this kind? So therefore it is mentioned hardly 20 people come out after hundreds and thousands of Navy SEALs who apply for this. 20 come out successful out of this. Most of them give up. Because most of these people who apply are already in the army. Either in the Navy or in the, land forces or in the Air Force. Then it is said that after this the story has just begun for them. Then they have to commence 2 years of advanced training. As if all this was not, all kinds of warfare they have to be trained in. And such that the reaction time for them is only 0.27 seconds in case of any emergency. That's how the time to react is. Someone points at you, just take it and then shoot him back. 0.27 seconds. That's a Kshatriya. On top of that, they have to sit in a classroom and get proficiency in languages like Arabic for obvious reasons. Right? Just imagine, after all this, you're tired and you're studying, you're studying all those languages right now in a classroom. So this is something which is very difficult. When I studied this and I say that these are the people, and after all that, what do you get? You get governmental salary. And then what is in return you are expected to do? You are expected to give up your family, your child, and then you are expected to give up your life for the sake of others. So sometimes when Australia Day and all these days come, when we have to glorify the martyrs, sometimes we just take it as a holiday for us. But when I read this, it was an eye-opener. So much we have to have gratitude to these personalities because of which we are safe in society today. And we are able to do our job. Of course, we are also in one sense trying to address the problem of non-violence through the basics. But yes, so our moment is the most glorious. There is no doubt about it. But then they are giving up their lives. So we have to also take a moment to thank these people. So Narad Muni is saying that at the age of 5 or 6, how can someone be trained in all this Kshatriya warfare? So he is referring to Dhruva Maharaj as Kshatra Bandhu. Because he was not trained in any of this. Yet, despite not having been trained in any of this, He attained an exalted position, even with Kshatriyas with so many austerities cannot achieve after many, many years. So, while trying to understand this, we have to understand that yes, a Kshatriya who is not in devotional life goes through so many austerities and gives up his life for the sake of his country. But still, a Kshatriya, even after doing this glorious activity, attains only the heavenly planets. Why so? Because at the end of the day, a Kshatriya acts on one identity. What is that identity? I am an Indian. I am an Australian. I am a German. I am a Jew. I am this, I am that. So that identity simply means that whatever activity you do is based on that identity. And that identity is a temporary identity. Right? Today, a Kshatriya may give up his life as a Pakistani soldier. But at the end of the day, they still achieve the heavenly planets. Because it still comes under an act of highest piety. And protecting and following Varna Shrama Dharma. But what Dhruva Maharaj did was, he did not just practice Varnashrama Dharma. He established Daivi Varnashrama. Which is, he did Dharma Artha Kama Moksha. He did whatever it was, you know, to establish all the layers in society. But on top of that, he also ensured that his subjects are on the path of liberation. That is why he is such a glorious king. And that is why Narad Muni cannot stop himself from glorifying this great personality. So that is one theme which comes in Srila Prabhupada's purports. The second theme is that Narad Muni, Prabhupada writes this point, you know, he hammers this point, that his spiritual master was very pleased with him. Which is also, in one sense, the goal of our life. The goal of all our life is to please our supreme spiritual master, who is Srila Prabhupada. So we all of us are at least expected to, and we struggle to work for that. Some of us may be able to do more, some of us may not be able to do as much as others are doing. But definitely all of us will agree that that is the perfection of our life. That Srila Prabhupada is pleased with whatever we did in this lifetime. So here, Dhruva Maharaj is so fortunate that his spiritual master is glorifying him. And he is very pleased with him. So, why is Narad Muni pleased? Because Narad Muni, if you see, is Shakti Avesh Avatar. Narad Muni's only mission is to deliver all the fallen souls, to pick up the conditioned souls and ensure that they are delivered from the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. This is what a preacher's life is all about. That is why a preacher eats, sleeps, breathes, everything, so that the fallen souls can go back to Godhead. So as a preacher, this is the preacher's greatest happiness, to see that whoever he has preached to is now very nicely following the principles of Krishna consciousness and is genuinely happy in his life. So Narad Muni is very, very happy that this outcome has happened for Dhruva Maharaj. And Narad Muni is now glorifying Dhruva Maharaj in that happiness. So what is Narad Muni glorifying Dhruva Maharaj for? There are two qualities that are coming here. One is sincerity of purpose and determination to achieve the goal. Sincerity and determination. And if we see Srila, I was studying a lot of Srila Prabhupada's letters to various of his disciples like Madhu Dvisa Prabhu and so on and so forth. So many disciples Prabhupada wrote to. Prabhupada always used to use these words, be sincere and be determined. Sincerity and determination. In many, many letters, you know, Prabhupada writes this to his disciples. So Narad Muni also glorifies, you know, Dhruva Maharaj for the same reasons. So Dhruva Maharaj accepted with determination the instructions, accepted with humility, followed with sincerity and determination the instructions of Narad Muni. Though Dhruva Maharaj actually started with Sakama Bhakti. The initial Bhakti which Dhruva Maharaj did was not Akama Bhakti. It was Sakama Bhakti. He wanted something material. That's why he approached Lord Krishna. But whatever it is, his motive might have been, he followed the process with faith. He didn't say, oh Narad Muni, maybe it may or may not work. What happens? You know, can I try other methods also in parallel? Just in case, you know, to mitigate the risk of this process not working. Let me also try other ways. No. He just put his faith in this and he accepted the instructions of his spiritual master. Later on, even when Lord Krishna appeared and himself gave instructions, Prishnigarbha himself, Lord Vishnu came and gave instructions, he accepted the instructions of the Lord, ruled the kingdom of his father very righteously. Not only that, when he was deviating little bit, when he went overboard, he did not have the false ego. Now that I am the king, now I don't need any shiksha gurus. Now I am the master. No, I have anyway, I had darshan of Lord Vishnu. Who is the shiksha guru to come and tell me anything? Shiksha guru, don't you know that, I have seen directly Lord Vishnu. That was not his mood. So even after that, when Swayambhu Manu came, he very, with lot of humility, he accepted, yes, I agree. No, I have gone overboard in killing the yakshas, and he amended his behavior. And then he left his kingdom to timely practice intense bhakti. But after leaving his kingdom, timely, he actually practiced intense bhakti also. Not that he left and then he was thinking that, okay, I have so much time in hand now, what do I do? Okay. So he actually invested all that free time of his in intensifying his bhakti, and he did his bhakti in the association of sages in Badrikashram. How do we know he did that? Because if you study the purports carefully, you will realize that when the Vaikuntha Viman came, it's not that Dhruva Maharaj said, oh, Vaikuntha Viman has come, let me run and jump, so that I get a nice seat there. So not like that. So Dhruva Maharaj went and first he paid obeisances to all the sages who were there around him, who were not boarding the Vaikuntha Viman. But he showed gratitude to them. It was not that when the reward was coming, he forgot everything. He forgot all the footsteps, steps that led to that. He did not forget. He went and paid obeisances to all the sages. He paid obeisances to even the Vishnu Dutas who had come. He paid obeisance to the chariot also on which he was going to travel. And then he inquired about his mother. And then he stepped on the top of death with his foot. And then he boarded the Vaikuntha Viman. So he did not forget. So gratitude is continuously, this quality of gratitude, Dhruva Maharaj demonstrates. And that is why his spiritual master is very pleased. Now, in the later half of the purport, Prabhupada suddenly takes a detour and reminds us about Bharat Maharaj, which we read in the purport some time back. That Bharat Maharaj had to go through three lifetimes, whereas Dhruva Maharaj only in one lifetime. Now, why this happened? So, in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first chapter, when Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami, what is the duty of a person about to die? The culminating verse of that is, etan nirvidyamananam icchatam akuto bhayam yogi nam nripa nirnitam harer nama anukirtanam. Anukirtanam means that you do kirtan, bhakti, in the association of devotees and as prescribed by the acharyas. Which means not to invent our own ways of doing bhakti, rather doing bhakti exactly the way that it has been ordained by the acharyas, and doing this bhakti in the association of devotees, not as a freelancer devotee. In the association. Now this is where Bharat Maharaj faltered. So if you see the charitra of Bharat Maharaj and the charitra of Dhruva Maharaj, in one sense they are very similar. They both are very powerful kings, both ruled the kingdom very righteously, and both of them left the kingdom at the right time to intensify their bhakti. The only difference why one succeeded in one lifetime and other took three lifetimes was that towards the end, Bharat Maharaj went into a forest and tried to do bhakti in isolation. Whereas Dhruva Maharaj still, even when he wanted to do intense bhajan, he was still in the association of devotees. And that is what was the nemesis of Bharat Maharaj, if you can use that word for him. Okay, because that's why those three lifetimes for him. Right? Whereas Dhruva Maharaj in one single lifetime. Similarly, we see, and what happened? Because he was alone, what happened was, in his intense bhajan, he got attracted to a deer. And there was nobody to correct him. There was nobody to correct him and bring him back, saying that, Bharat Maharaj, you are an exalted devotee, but hang on, I think you are slightly deviating right now from your intense bhajan. Because at the end of the day, you should know that you are not the protector of this deer, it is Lord Krishna. So, when you are used to, you know, protecting the citizens of your kingdom, then there the tendency to think that I am the protector and I am the controller is something which naturally comes to somebody, right? It is just some of the anarthas that come as a result of our own services, right? So, but there was nobody to, as a checkpoint over there. The thermostat was not there, if you like. And that's why he had 3 lifetimes and Dhruva Maharaj 1 lifetime. Similarly, we see in the pastime of Saubhari Muni, Saubhari Muni also tried to invent his own process of bhakti. So he went underwater, thinking that underwater there will be no disturbance to my bhajan. But underwater, when he saw 2 fishes mating, he also developed a desire to embrace grihastha life and to mate. Therefore, he had to undergo a very long process after that, you know, to attain perfection. So, Narad Muni is not, it's not just incidental that Narad Muni is glorifying Dhruva Maharaj. Narad Muni is glorifying Dhruva Maharaj because Dhruva Maharaj did not deviate from that path at all. He followed the process to the core, to the hilt, 100%, whatever Narad Muni said, he followed that process. So, obviously, as a spiritual master, he is very pleased with Narad Muni, and as a preacher, a preacher always sometimes preaches by the examples of other devotees. So Narad Muni is preaching to others the example of this glorious disciple. Like that. So, and then Srila Prabhupada says, my spiritual master, His Holiness Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, said that if one wants, one can go back to Godhead in one life. But that's a very nice statement, if one wants. The question is, do we want to go back to Godhead? That is where, as devotees, sometimes there is a struggle. Do we really want to go back to Godhead? Or is material life coupled with devotional life not such a bad proposition after all? So that is where sometimes we struggle. So if we just delve a little bit deeper into this and go back to our, how we came into Krishna consciousness, all of us. So we were all very happily immersed in enjoying material life once upon a time. For example, in my own life, I remember, I wanted to become, my goal was that I wanted to become the CEO of a company. I said, I will become one. So I have to study very hard and I'll work like a donkey in corporate life. Of course, I didn't know that it was, I didn't use the word donkey. If someone would have said, I said, don't use the word donkey, It's passion. It's passion to change the corporate world. So we all start with some kind of a passion to do something. And we work very hard. At the same time, why do we want to become a big man? If someone asked you, why do you want to become a big man? Actually, we don't know why we want to become a big man. Because it's not about becoming a CEO of a company. But it is about becoming a, it's about improving our prestige. That is what it is. Improving our prestige can come in different forms. Becoming the CEO of a company, becoming the greatest sportsman, becoming the greatest musician. But at the end of the day, I should be recognized as the best. So the question is, I to be recognized. My full potential. The world has to see. Like Prabhupada says, the light of the firefly. We want to all show our small light. So, we dream about wealth, then automatically, we also dream that, if I am successful, then, I will have a very beautiful wife, beautiful girlfriend, everything. I'll have a beautiful car. Then you start imagining a beautiful house with a green lawn outside. So, all these dreams start coming. But in India, there is some piety also, which is there. So, sometimes what you do, occasionally you'll go to the temple and ring a bell or break a coconut or put 2 rupees in the hundi. And then pay obeisances and then pray to the Lord saying that, oh Lord, please fulfill all my desires. Please ensure that, nothing comes in the way. Please ensure that I get through my studies with good grades. Please ensure I get into the right company. Please ensure that I don't go wrong in my career. So, we start with all that. And then when we start with all that and when we get into all that, there are 2 things which happen with devotees. Either some of them are very successful, and some of them get a slap, in that pursuit. Who are the more fortunate ones? Those who get that slap. Those who are successful, when you actually think, if Krishna actually, when I prayed at that time, of course not to Krishna but to the demigods, that make me successful, if they would have done that actually, what would I have been today? I would have been none other than, maximum what it would have been? I would have been a proud CEO of a company. trying to see how I can apple cut the other CEOs now. That would have been our puzzle. What else do you think success will bring? Success in material life will only bring desire for, will only breed desire for more success, and it will never, never stop. There is no satiation in that. So, and or at the end of the day, maximum sometime retirement will come. Then after that, what you will do? You will try and play golf with other CEOs. That's all. And start talking about your whole conversation, your whole Bhagavatam class in the morning will be how the CEOs in the world should change for the betterment of corporate life. This will be your Bhagavatam class to the others. And how poor the next generation of CEOs are. That is how the mind will go. Beyond that, the mind doesn't know anything. It doesn't know the purpose of life. But the fortunate few, like some of us whose plan went awry, right? What happened? We came into bhakti. But there are still those unfortunate ones whose plan went awry, but they did not come to bhakti. That is also there. For example, I know many of my friends and colleagues who, when their plan went awry, they succumbed to the mode of ignorance and went to drugs or alcohol, right, and ruined their lives completely. Yet others, because they were in the mode of passion, they wanted to achieve the goal, but they were not successful through the right path. They took the wrong path. We call as do number ka danda, which means, you know, what is that called as in English? Nefarious dealings. So I'll become a drug dealer, for example. Then I'll achieve the same money what that classmate of mine attained by becoming a CEO of a company. Or other classmate of mine attained by becoming a big businessman. So people can try to attain the same goals through the, you know, people can go into mode of ignorance and mode of passion. But when we, as what we did was, fortunately we were saved by some devotee. So we came into bhakti. But remember that we came to bhakti with the same conditioning. So while we are in the process of bhakti, that conditioning, yes, it is going down, 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 down with every passing day, but that condition still is there to some extent. In some devotees, it may be 80%. In some other devotees, it may be 5%. But that conditioning is still there somewhere for success in material life. And therefore, we will find that even as devotees, though we say, Asle seva padaratam pinastuma madarshanan, we will say all that, but at the end of the day, we will always also go to the same Lord and say, oh Lord, please protect my job. Right? So we do two kinds of prayers simultaneously. Because actually, if the Lord comes out of the altar and tells us, okay, Asle seva padaratam pinastuma, okay, fine, I will take away all your money now, I'll take away your job also. You will become a pauper on the street. Are you okay with it? Look, I'm giving you. You just said, Asle seva padaratam. I said, Lord, I'm praying, but don't take it so seriously. You know? Take it, but means you know what I mean, Lord. You know what I mean. You know? So the mind is like this. We say the prayers, but we actually don't want that outcome also. But we want that outcome also. But we don't want that outcome also. So it's like that. So we have to understand our mind. Oh, mind, what do I want? What do I want? So when we sit with ourselves and think, what do I want? Do I really have sincerity of purpose? Time and again, only one answer, at least for me, comes, no. I'm not ready. If Krishna comes right now and tells me, come to the spiritual world, I'll say, hang on, you know, my son is there, my wife is there, you know, so my parents are also there in Bombay. Let them first, you know, settle down. In fact, I was studying one lecture. I was reading the transcripts of one lecture where it was mentioned that Dhruva Maharaj also did not directly go into Vaikuntha. He went to Vaikuntha in one sense, but that Vaikuntha which is in the material universe, because he still had some attachment for his mother. So he had to ask, what will happen to my mother? If he had complete faith in the Lord, he wouldn't have asked, what about my mother? Right? So for that one attachment also, he did not directly go to Vaikuntha Loka. So if Dhruva Maharaj, is that situation is there, what to speak of us? Who have so many attachments in this world. My son, my daughter, my wife, my house, my bank balance. So many attachments are there. Or my identities that I have developed. In material or even in spiritual life. Therefore, to go back to Godhead in one lifetime, it is very much possible. But it is not so... it is simple, but it is not very easy. Because even when we... when we become fairly regular and established in our spiritual practices, then what happens after we come into the temple with genuine intentions, initial days, one is always very subservient to senior devotees initial days are, you know, probably if you go and reminisce initial days, why? What is our identity? We go to everyone and say, I'm a neophyte devotee. I'm just new in Krishna consciousness. I'm just new. I remember when I was in Canada, I remember, when will I ever go back to those days? Because in those days, everyone used to give love. Why? Because genuinely, we were saying that, we can't say I'm an advanced devotee or I'm a senior devotee or anything. Nobody will say that in the initial days at least, right? After this, those upadhis or false identities will start coming into the mind, saying that I have been so many years in Krishna consciousness. But those initial days, you get, you know, you are not envious of anyone because you are looking at everyone as your senior. But as we progress in bhakti, the quality of the mood of looking at everyone as your senior goes down, 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 down. Because what happens after that? Some people start becoming peers and some people start becoming juniors. And juniors invariably will glorify you, saying that because of you I became devotee. If you were not there, what will happen? You're Siksha Guru. You know, all those tags they will give, right? When the mind is very strong, when the sadhana is strong, one will not succumb to that. But when the sadhana becomes weak, that's how Maya attacks. Because Maya has one job, to keep us in this material world. And she's a perfect employee. She has to get outstanding rating every performance cycle. Perfect job she does. So she knows exactly where the mind is weak and she exactly attacks you relentlessly on that. Relentlessly that attack comes. So then she will attack you when the mind is, oh, I'm a senior. Oh, but my peers are not acknowledging me. So therefore there is a fight with peers. Sometimes the fight is with spiritual master also. I remember I heard of situations where someone said my spiritual master did not inquire about my health enough. Therefore, I am relinquishing him as my spiritual master. But actually, the goal of a devotee is to serve the spiritual master. Ishwara Puri was serving Madhavendra Puri right till the very end. You know, cleaning, you know, the excreta of Madhavendra Puri. Of course, we should understand that Madhavendra Puri's body was not material. But still, if you see, Dosari Narottam Das Thakur used to sweep the courtyard of Loknath Maharaj, where he used to pass stool and then he used to hug that broom and roll in the dust. Now, this is one platform. Other is my spiritual master did not inquire about my health. Therefore, I am changing my spiritual master. Where we expect spiritual master to serve us rather than vice versa. So, when we come into bhakti, there are a lot of these deviations that can take us away from going back, you know, to Godhead in one lifetime. Therefore, one has to wade through umpteen number of difficulties. And what those difficulties in our life are, only we know very well. Like I heard in one lecture, that we can pretend, you know, in front of so many devotees. But at the end of the day, our heart knows whether we are sincerely doing something or not. We know it inside our heart. So therefore, we have to come face to face with our own anarthas. And the more and more time we start spending time thinking, meditating on our anarthas, then automatically in the lesser and lesser time, we will start seeing anarthas in other devotees. So this is, and if we can practice that, and every moment of our life, whatever service that we are doing, maybe it may be garland services, it may be pujari services, it may be preaching, it may be book distribution, at every moment of our life, if we understand one principle, which is Samasiddhir Haritoshanam. If at every moment we think that next activity that I am doing, is it pleasing to the Lord? Is it pleasing to the devotees? So every delta moment of our life, if we always check ourselves, asking these two basic questions. Whatever next activity that I am going to do, is it going to be pleasing to devotees? Is it going to be pleasing to Krishna? Then certainly there is a possibility of going back to Godhead at the end of this very lifetime. But if we have not checked that, if we don't ask that question of ourselves at every single moment, we may fail. There is no doubt about that. We may definitely fail. But at least we are checking ourselves. At least the process has started. At least we don't start saying that I am a humble devotee. Sometimes we start claiming, I am a very humble devotee. Everyone knows, you know, I am not the one who is not humble. But a person who is not humble is the one who will say that I am a humble devotee. A humble devotee will never say that I am a humble devotee. Right? So at every point in time, we have to check ourselves. Otherwise, Maya will start giving certificates to us that we are very humble and down to earth. So we have to start checking. And when we start checking every moment of our life, then there is a chance we will go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. So Narad Muni in this verse is glorifying Dhruva Maharaj. Look at all this. So many entitlements came to him. So many allurements came his way, but he was still fixed. At that right time, he renounced all that leadership, this, that identity, leader of the kingdom, and went to Badrikashram and attained the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Therefore, my devotee is very glorious. I am very, very happy with him. So that was the gist of this verse. So I'll stop here and ask any questions or comments from senior devotees who are present here. Prana Prabhu, Bhakta Prabhu. Or any questions? Yes, ma'am.
You mentioned that Maharaj Bharat had to take three lifetimes because he went to the forest alone and there was nobody to guide him when he got distracted. But we see that in Bhagavatam there are so many examples when a lot of the devotees like Kardam, he left Devgupi in the care of Lord Kapila and he also went to Bhajan. And also King Anga went to Ravana was disturbing, he became distracted and he left. So there are so many examples that actually at the end of the life the devotees, the pure devotees actually leave the palace or they leave their duties and they go alone in the forest and do Bhajan. So why did Maharaj Bharat only get distracted and the others didn't get distracted?
So it is mentioned that there are two types of saints, Bhajananandis and Goshti Anandis. Even today, if you see, and if you read books like Saints of Raj and all these books, then you will find that many of these Bhajananandis also do the same thing. They retire to the forest to practice Nirjan Bhajan at a mature stage of their life. What Prabhupada is trying to highlight for all of us is that it is not that Srila Prabhupada is just opening our eyes to the risk of fall down if we do not do bhajan in the association of devotees. Okay, for example, Bharat Maharaj could have also taken shelter of the Paramatma within his heart and taken shelter of those instructions and said that yes, I am developing this fall compassion. So he could have done a self check at that point in time, but he did not do that. So some of them may succumb to the temptation, whereas some of them may be successful in doing that self-check on themselves and still be able to progress. But for a common man, it is very difficult. For a common person, especially in Kali Yuga, because at that time when Kardama Muni and all were there, then it was a different age and time. But in Kali Yuga, Prayana Alpa Ayushya Sabhya Kalau Asmin Yuge Janaha Manda Sumanda Mateya Manda Bhagyahi Upadrutaha. Everyone is what? Disturbed all the time. So when our mind is highly disturbed, right, at that, and we are not very steady, our mind is not yet steady, we are not Sita Pragyas, right? So when we go alone and start practicing perfection of bhakti without the association of devotees, then we are at a very high risk of falling down. But some exalted personalities like Kardama Muni, they may not be at a very high risk, and sometimes some devotee may also succeed in that. So the instruction of Srila Prabhupada is for all of us in Kali Yuga, that we should not practice bhakti in isolation. Prabhupada is just quoting, it's not actually Bharat Maharaj also, it could be a leela of the Lord. Okay, but the leela is for us in Kali Yuga to understand that if this can happen to Bharat Maharaj, what is the risk that it can happen to you? So Prabhupada is saying, my dear disciples, all of you are at a very high risk. That's the message that Prabhupada is trying to give here. Is it okay? Yes, ma'am. Still he asked, because when one becomes a devotee of the Lord, okay, let us talk about the gopis. So Uddhava, he sings two verses in praise of the gopis, and these two verses we very recently studied, when we studied the 10th canto. Uddhava says that of all the people on earth, it is only the gopis who have perfected their embodied lives, because they have attained pure unalloyed devotion to Lord Mukunda. They are the only ones who have perfected it. Of all the people on earth, Uddhava is saying that, who is number two, is runner up in the Bhagavatamrita, with gopis right being on top, right? So he says that only these people have perfected the left, because he says, for the sake of Krishna, they have given up the path of chastity. They have given up all the concern for their husband, child, everyone. Why? All they are worried about is the pleasure of Krishna. They are not even worried about their deliverance. Here what happens? There is a concern for... He is delivered, but there is still a concern for deliverance. A pure devotee is not concerned about deliverance. A pure devotee is only concerned about pleasure of Krishna and service to Krishna. So there is still a higher principle. If you see Dhruva Maharaj, yes, he is an exalted devotee. But if we start talking about the gopis, Dhruva Maharaj will come fairly lower in that chart, if you like. Why the gopis are very special? Because the gopis are not concerned about their deliverance. In fact, the dust pastime, gopis are willing to give their dust to, you know, feet to Narad Muni. Narad Muni says, you will go to hell. They say, oh, no problem. Why? Because it shows contempt for deliverance. The concept of deliverance and going back to Vaikuntha is condemned by them. That is why Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Devotion that the six characteristics of devotees, one out of that is what? Moksha Lagutakrit. A devotee derides the concept of liberation. Now, do you get that? So, see Dhruva Maharaj's concern for deliverance of his mother, and on the other spectrum, you see the gopis who are not bothered. In fact, there is a verse also which came few weeks back, where it says that Salokya Sarashti Sarupya Ekatam Apyuta Diyamanam Na Grihananti Vina Matsevanam Janaha. Which means a devotee is not concerned with Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, even proximity to the Lord, Vaikuntha planet is not concerned. A devotee is not concerned. Why? Because Vina Matsevanam Janaha. Devotee is only concerned with one thing, with whether I am able to serve the Lord. That is what the Aflisya Pada also, Pinastumam is also, which we chant every day morning. That, O Lord, you may keep me in any condition of life, but let me, I am your worship, you are my worshipable Lord unconditionally. Which means even if you don't grant deliverance to me, you don't grant deliverance to my mother, father, anyone, I am still my, you are my worshipable Lord unconditionally. So there is a spectrum we have to see here. Is it clear? Prabhu, 1 minute. Prabhu, you had a, I saw your hand.
Yeah,
you can call him 13th Mahajan, but I cannot answer why his name was not mentioned in by Sukadeva Goswami in Srimad Bhagavatam as a Mahajan. That I do not know. I'll be guided by the other senior devotees. Sorry. So, why he is not named amongst the 13? We do not know. So sometimes the list of top 10 is given, but the 11th is not there in the top 10. That's all I can say from a material conception. Mahatmaji, sorry, 1 minute.
You mentioned that Dhruva Maharaj, when he ascended to the plane, he tells the dead person fine.
Yes.
So what is the importance of the foot on the dead person?
You know the answer, still I'll answer. So Dhruva Maharaj stepped on death personified. It means that where Vishnu Dutas are there in presence of you, Yamadutas do not have any power there. That is what I understood from that. So it is very easy. You can step your foot on top of the Yamadutas. So when you step your foot on someone's head, that means how subservient those people are to you, right? They have no power or influence over you. Otherwise, how will they allow you to put your foot on their head? So it just talks about the power of bhakti. The power of bhakti to Lord Krishna is that Yamadutas cannot influence you in any manner whatsoever. It cannot impact your life in any manner whatsoever. That is what I understood from that.
Thank you.
You mentioned that, like, my question is that being practicing devotees, personally, if we don't even know how to pray to the Lord, like, you know, what should be our prayers, like, you know, and when we go through Srimad Bhagavatam and we see the prayers of Lord Brahma, prayers of Kunti Maharani, being so elevated prayers to the Lord, and as you mentioned, sometimes we pray in front of the Lord, but we actually don't, but if Lord takes it seriously, we are not ready. So how should we still chant those prayers, and what should be the mood of a devotee in prayer?
It's an advanced question, but still I will try to answer, because I am sitting on this Vyasasam today, that's why I am answering. Otherwise I will probably ask you to ask this question to other senior devotees, and I will still be guided by Bhakta Prabhu and other seniors in the room. on this answer. But Roji, you want to comment on this, please?
Prayer is good, yeah. But the greatest prayer is the Maha Mantra that's given by our Acharya Sri Prabhupada. So thereby, by chanting the Maha Mantra, we're praying automatically, my dear Lord, please engage me in the service. My dear Lord, engage me in the service. My dear Lord, engage me in the service. That should be the goal of our life. Whatever else is a secondary thing. But that's why we chant 16 clear, good rounds every day. And that's our prayer. Everything else is added to that. But our rounds are the most important prayer that we can possibly do.
Thank you, Prabhu. I also was studying in Japa Reform book, Satswarup Das Maharaj writes that if we cannot chant attentively, then we have to pray for the sincere desire to chant attentively. So we have to beg for that. Because chanting attentively, actually, and again in another book I was reading, that chanting attentively is not the goal. Okay, it's difficult to it's slightly tricky to understand this. Please, I don't want to misquote. Okay. Chanting attentively is not the goal, but chanting attentively is a reward of our struggle to chant attentively. So therefore, the sincerity of the struggle to chant attentively will be rewarded by attentive chanting, because 15.15, Lord Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto mattaha smritir jnanam apahanam cha. So my remembrance also will come by my own mercy to you. Don't think that it will come because of something else. But to attract Krishna's mercy, we have to show sincerity of... So when the mind deviates, all we have to do is sincerely struggle to bring it back. Not just say, okay, thankfully my mind is deviating, so I don't have to go through the austerities of chanting. So by the time my mind has come back, I've already finished my round. Thank you very much. Sometimes the mind is like that. It's very tricky. It is very happy when we have finished 16 rounds. But actually, when the day the mind becomes very unhappy, My God, my 16 rounds have got over now. Oh Lord, when will I now pick up the beads again and chant? That means the taste of the ruchi has now started manifesting. But till the time, we are either in the anartha nivritti stage or at best it could be nishtha. But ruchi has not come. When ruchi comes, then it is not a question of, then one doesn't struggle for chanting the holy names, or one doesn't count, or one doesn't look halfway, in the bead bag, how many are left before the flower comes. These are all symptoms not of ruchi. Okay, so I'll stop here because it's 9:15. Maybe we can take any questions offline because I don't want to delay the other programs of other devotees. Krantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai Shri Prabhupada.